Welcome to Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality, a show designed to share spiritual insights with you so that you can comprehend the universe and how it functions. You are about to experience raised consciousness. This is a place where spiritual principles are shared with the goal of assisting you to expand your understanding of both the seen and unseen worlds. Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality helps you to discern the timeless truths handed down from wise sages through the ages from the airy-fairy nonsense that is being taught today. Now, here is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth.
Welcome to Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality, the radio show that disseminates esoteric knowledge and common sense spirituality. I'm Sharon Lynn Wyeth, creator of Namology Science, the ability to know all about a person's personality and the soul's purpose simply from a person's name. Now, the beautiful inspirational music you just heard is part of Shine by Dee Lemur. You can hear more of her music by visiting her on her website, dlemor.com. And of course, we always end our show with her fabulous song, The Shine. Okay, our today's topic is about the seven deadly sins and how to clear them. How did the seven deadly sins originate? What are their purposes? Why seven and not another number? Why are the sins specifically? What are they and how do we overcome them? And our special guest today, returning with us again, I love having Pat Robertson Rice on with us. Pat Robertson Rice offers spiritual counseling services that allow individuals to obtain the missing piece of information needed to come to terms with any issue being faced, decide on a proper course of action, and finally move forward in life. Now, helping others move through the most difficult times in their lives is her spiritual commitment. Help is just a phone call away. She has written a book, Greatness Thrust Upon Us. And I heard about Pat, I always remind you guys that I heard about Pat in 2007 when I was living in China and I had a session. And the first part of her reading was phenomenal. And then I started to ask questions. And the answers she gave me were hard to believe, so that I thought she was really superb at the first part, you know, that she provided prior to me asking questions. And then I didn't know about so much about the answers to the questions. And then a year later, when I was departing China, and I re-listened to her tape, every single answer she had provided that I had found so hard to believe a year earlier was absolutely accurate. Now, it just amazes me, her accuracy and what she's able to produce. And she does it so differently than anybody else I know. I just love Pat. And so, anyway, she's continued to be incredible. So welcome to the show, Pat. Great to have you back again.
Thank you, Sharon. I'm very happy to be here today. And the seven deadly sins is a very interesting topic.
Well, that's why I chose you to do it, because I thought you, having been a former teacher, would know exactly how to walk us through the seven deadly sins and how to clear them. So let's start with sin number one. What is it?
Well, first of all, let's tell what that means, okay?
Yep.
Something strange happens, Sharon. You know, when people talk about the seven deadly sins, they think that they can go to a certain page in the Bible and they'll just list them all out and talk about them. Well, guess what? They're not in the Bible. They
oh,
do
that's
talk
amazing.
About some of the things in the Bible, but there is no listing that ever occurred in the Bible. So what happened is, first of all, it's a list of transgressions, we call them sometimes, or vices within the Christian teachings. Now, back in the day, Sharon, what they were trying to do was to scare the people into being nice, you know, and tell how you could develop a good moral character and be a contributor to the world. But they taught them so that if you committed these sins, then you would not be held in favor with God, and you would not be going to heaven. And so this is a gentleman by the name of John Cassian in the 5th century was the one who actually chose the vices and put them in his book called The Institutes. And he sold the book in Europe. Well, someone found the book And then in the 6th century, Pope Gregory VI popularized it by making it something that the priests used when they were doing confessions, you know, and they would say, my daughter, have you sinned in lust, or have you sinned in greed, or what have you. And then the other thing they did, when you go online, this was amazing. He commissioned oil paintings of all of the vices and sculptures of these demonic looking things, you know, that were holding people in these horrible sins that they were doing. And the people were certainly aware of the deadly sins because they saw them in their churches. You know, I've asked several of my friends when you told me to work on this topic, they couldn't name the seven deadly sins. They could not. They didn't know what they were. So we're going to say what they are, and then we'll start. Okay?
Yep.
All right. So first we have lust, pride, envy, gluttony, wrath, sloth, which means laziness, and greed. So we'll repeat them again. Lust, pride, envy, gluttony, wrath, laziness, and greed. Now, I do want to say this. There has been an animated game for kids called The Seven Deadly Sins. And believe it or not, they sold 38 million copies. Then in 2014, Netflix got the idea that each year they would make a movie about the seven deadly sins. So this year in 2021, they will complete all seven movies that you can watch, you know, on Netflix. And I happened to see one on Envy, and they did a great job of showing how the lady ruined her life by being envious, you know, of her sister. So it was very well done. So we'll start, if it's all right with you, with lust, okay?
Yeah, sounds good. We all like lust.
Well, I do want to make a distinction in lust and greed because people get them all confused, okay? So I'm going to start with lust, and this just means that you have a strong passion or a strong longing, especially for sexual desires. Now, the same definition is for greed, but you need to understand it's a strong passion or a longing, but for greed, it's material things. So if you're talking about adultery and, you know, dating a lot of women, it's not going to go under greed. It's going to go under lust. Now, lust always, to the ancient people, was about not committing adultery, not going outside of the marriage vows. But today, when we try to make this meaningful to people so they can see if we step on their toes today, if they say, oh, I don't have any lust, well, you might want to listen to this and see. Now, what's happened in our modern society, of course, is that we have been inundated with movies and TV shows. And we are sitting there, and we don't have any choice except to change the channel if there's something we don't like. So all of these explicit sexual scenes that occur every day, several times a day, in all of the shows, has certainly not helped to stop the lusting of certain people. And the sad thing is that the internet has done the same thing to perpetuate lust, because one of the problems that has come with the internet is that people now have access to pornography anytime. And so we seem to be drifting toward more people looking at pornography. And, you know, thank God parents can put those things on there to see what their children are looking at when they're on looking at these devices. So hopefully they can stop that. But to me, the worst thing is the sexual predators, because they are already lusting after younger people, and they are using the internet to lure these innocent people into a meetup where they are raped or robbed or kidnapped. So lust is a problem. our culture has certainly changed, and kids have a new term. And I'm talking about high school kids, and I'm talking about college kids, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, we hooked up Saturday night. Well, hook up can mean partied together, but in a lot of times, hook up means that you just meet somebody, lust after them, you go home, you sleep together, and then you don't see them again. And that's certainly not a way to look at how a relationship should go. And then the other night I was listening, and it happens in every city, but it happened in our city, where some kids had gone to a nightclub, and one girl stabbed the other girl because she said, I don't like the way you're looking at my boyfriend. So this concept of lust is just causing problems with bad things that happen to people, that a lustful look might even be misinterpreted, I guess I would say. And then, of course, let's not forget slick advertising, because we all know that advertising involves sexual attraction. So our society just permeates young people with this concept of lust, and sometimes gives them different views about what's proper or not. Did you want to ask any questions about that?
No, keep going. This is fascinating.
Okay, so I do want to talk about greed, which is this excessive longing or this excessive passion. And remember, this one is about the pursuit and accumulation of material things. And about, I'd say, 5 years ago was the first blast on TV of doing documentaries or shows about people who were hoarders. I had no concept that those people existed. Now, I had seen people have, you know, teaspoon collections and thimble collections like my grandmother had, and I wouldn't have called that a hoarding, I'd have called it a collection. But when TV started showing these people and the way their homes looked and everything, I think all of us could agree that somebody who was excessively compelled to have material things, hoarding would be a prime example.
Now, well, you know, Pat, that I do that on the side. I literally go in and it takes me a week and I declutter homes.
Well, are they as bad as what we were shown on TV?
Some of them are.
Wow.
Some of them are.
You're a brave woman, I've got to say. But I'm going to go back to the slick advertising that our country is just permeated with in magazines and on television day in and day out, because the ads say bigger is better and keep up with the Joneses, you only go around once, go for it, change it, charge it, worry about it later. And so we all begin to think that the collection of things, a lot of different things, is not a problem. Well, you know, when you do that, there are some byproducts. And that is that when people find out that you have 13 cars, and they find out you have 100 pairs of tennis shoes, and they find out that you have 52 pieces of jewelry, then thefts and robberies are the byproducts of that, when people know when you're not home and things like that. So the problems come with this concept of greed. And I'm sad to say that some people have very unworthiness issues. They think they're not good enough, and so they use greed to make a display so that you will think, if you have a lot of so-and-so, then these people think that this shows that they are worthy. That's a psychological, something comes out. But when I first started working, do you care if I make a personal comment, Sharon?
Sure, go right ahead.
When I first started working with these, I worked with angels, and I said, well, which ones do I have a problem with? Now, at the time, I was living in Wilmington, North Carolina, and we had just had a god-awful hurricane that destroyed a lot of stuff, and people were having to live in tents while their houses went back together, and they said, you might want to check greed. I said, I'm not a greedy person. They said, well, go upstairs in your closet. Well, I don't think I'm any different than all women, and in my closet, I have three sizes. So I have the size I'm in now and the size I wore, you know, 3 months ago, and I'm hoping to get back in it, and then a size that I hadn't worn in 5 years, but I'm always hoping, you know, I might lose weight. They said, you need to look in your closet. It's ridiculous. So I took a whole weekend and tried these things on, and some of them I knew I'd never get in again. I went through my shoes, I went through all my linens, and I took all the stuff down to the Salvation Army, and it really made me feel good. And you know, the thing of it is, Sharon, I didn't miss any of it because I couldn't get in it anyway. So I was being greedy, because the definition is, and people, you should listen to this, greed occurs when you have things that other people desperately need, and you are just letting them sit on a shelf.
Wow.
So I learned my lesson, and in my classes, I always try to talk about that and to urge people to, you know, be generous. Now, the next one is called
Hold on. We're going to do gluttony after the break, because we're getting really close to that break time. But okay. I love that definition of the greed, that you've got something that somebody else could definitely need, and it's just sitting there. Where how many of us think, oh, my grandkids are going to need this down the road, or the whatever, and I want to know, is that also considered greed when you're saving it specifically, like when my grandkids get out on their own? And let's find out about that right after we come back from this break.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Pat Robertson Rice is a magnificent spiritual counselor. She can help you to recognize your gifts and talents. How do you identify who you are created to be? Are you an artisan, an inventor, a manager, or something else? How do you identify your innate abilities when they are different from your family's, or from our educational system, or from the industries popular in your community? How do you identify talents that are hidden, yet completely innate and natural to you? Contact Pat Robertson Rice at spiritualbeginnings101.com for an illuminating journey about your life path.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Welcome back to Luminescence, Common Sense Spirituality. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and our special guest today is Pat Robertson Rice. Now, if you want to get a hold of Pat Robertson Rice, the easy way is go to her website. It's called Spiritual Beginnings 101 or 101.com. And remember, beginnings has two N's in the middle of it. I mean, me as a math major, I always look at spelling and go, oh, I'm going to have to remember that one because none of it comes naturally. So Pat's website is spiritualbeginnings101 or 101.com. Okay, Pat, we were just ready. I had a question before you go on to gluttony. What if you're saving something for somebody down the road, like a grandparent says, my grandchildren could use this extra knife set when they get out on their own, so I'm going to put it in this box labeled future, you know, for the grandchildren. Is that also greed?
No. The books say if you have a purpose and you can tell for whom that purpose is, that's not greed. That's smart. That's love, that you want to save something of yours.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Okay. You were going to start on gluttony. I'm ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think everybody could give a definition of this, that it's an excessive or ongoing eating of food and drink. And I want to ask everybody if you have ever looked at pictures of magazines and Americans when they are touring in another country, say they might be in Australia or they might be in Japan or they might be in England or what have you. And have you noticed that present would be the word, that we are all extremely heavy, that we are overweight as Americans compared to the people who are actually living in that country. Well, the interesting thing is that in ancient history, if you were overweight, it was a sign of power. Nobody ever had to say, oh my God, he's a consul, or he's a president, or he's whatever, because only wealthy people could afford to eat. Most of the people were either eating what came out of their garden or being starved to death. So in history, being overweight carried forward as this was a person of great power. Well, our restaurants don't help us much because we have these wonderful all-you-can-eat buffets that many of us like to go to. Sharon and I like to eat Chinese food, and you know you eat more than you should when you go out like that. And then I seem to always like to go where they give larger portions in the restaurant, so hopefully I can take a little something home and not have to cook. So sometimes this excessive desire for food and drink, I think, has to do with how you like to eat. Another problem with this is that you are missing the picture. If you are gluttonous, you are having a certain misconception that at some point you are going to develop diabetes over this, you're going to get high cholesterol, and God forbid, you may even have a heart attack. So gluttony also has a spinoff of eating disorders, either not eating anything and starving yourself to gain control of your life, or eating prodigious amounts of food and then binging, you know, sticking your finger down your throat. So we have two ways that food is used as a control there. So, you know, you just have to ask yourself, has the doctor told me that I needed to lose weight or to get control of the fact that I'm drinking too much beer or I'm drinking too much alcohol or what have you? So you would be the only one who could answer whether you had a little, you know, a little touch of gluttony that you might need to get into perspective. The next one is called sloth. We don't say that word anymore. It's actually laziness. And you might say, well, how is that in America today? Well, folks, we just went through a pandemic, and there are many restaurants who could not find workers. A, they might not have been vaccinated and needed to be, but B, a lot of them were lucky enough to get unemployment. And so when the restaurants called and said, okay, we can open the restaurants again, and they said, well, I'm sorry, we're making more using getting this wonderful unemployment that our government provided for us. And so I'm not coming back to work right now. I'm making more than I ever made. And we know that is the truth. We've heard it said on television. So I'm not saying that's wrong. Please don't. But I'm just saying these people are staying home. The employers are not very happy with young people because they say they don't have any work ethic. They come to work in these sloppy clothes, and they got that cell phone, you know, just almost tattooed on their arm. And they think it's perfectly all right while they're putting up stock to be just talking to their friends and texting messages and things. So there's a work ethic, a psychological work ethic that's happened in the last few years where there's not a work ethic. And people will come to work, but they're going to, you know, halfway do their job. I recently went to sort of like a where people come, you know, and the parents and the kids hear the first in the summertime about school, you know, the school they're going to start, which they all have about right now in most states. And the gentleman who was conducting the seminar said, now, all of you in the freshman class, look to the right, because more than likely that person will not be here at the end of first semester. So they know that about 30% sometimes of the freshman class, now I'm not talking about Harvard and places like that, but I'm just saying colleges, you know, that are 4-year or 2-year, they know statistically that some of the students coming in are lazy, and they've never really had to be pushed in their schools to have a good work ethic. And so they're going to party and have a great time and not get their work in. And a lot of them are going to be real shocked when they don't pass that first semester and cannot come back to school. The side effects of allowing laziness to permeate your life, of course, would be that you're always bored. You have a lot of apathy, not much interested in anything. You get depressed. And then because you're just lying around or sitting around, some people develop physical problems due to the lack of exercise. So I think when you think about laziness, it depends on your generation. Young people seem to be much more active than older people in their sunset years. But you could see, just kind of ask yourself, has my doctor ever said anything to me about I needed to get out and do more exercise? The spiritual aspect, Sharon, of laziness is that everybody, every soul, every person on this planet has a gift. And if you don't ever go out and try new challenges and do new things, how will you find out what your gift is? If you're just sitting on the couch, I can promise you, you won't learn it that way.
So, oh, darn, right?
Yeah. And so everyone on this planet, I guarantee you, has a gift inside. And a lot of people are lucky, and they find out what that gift is, you know, in school, and they get in the band and find out they have musical talent, or they learn they can rap at an early age, or they learn they can paint or draw, or they get in, you know, dance and learn that they are great at ballet, and some learn they're scholastically great. Schools are really helpful in finding out what your gift is, but if all you do is go home and sit on the couch, that's really not going to help you very much. So look at your kids, look at yourself. Do you have any little thing you might need to check out on laziness? The next one is wrath. Now, they usually don't say the word anger. They say wrath, because wrath is a 200 times anger. It means I am really ticked. So one of the key things you can ask yourself if you say, do I have anger issues? Everybody does. You drop your groceries on the cement and all of them fall out in the street and you got to pick them up. Everybody has anger, but we're talking about harmful anger. This is what God does not like, or this is what's going to keep you out of heaven, whichever way you want to look at that. So one of the characteristics that you can look for with wrath is that you have come out of whatever ticked you off with a desire for vengeance. And your vengeance is going to be taking the law in your hands. You are not waiting for a policeman to do that. Now, we know that every action movie that we have ever watched on TV or gone to the movie theater, and people love action movies, has always been about getting whatever they took from us back or getting revenge on them for what they did to us. And in history, we all studied about how the mafia for many years controlled a lot of the big cities. Today, we have gangs. In every city, we have gangs that are causing havoc in the schools, and many people, unfortunately, who are very angry, take up self-destructive behavior, such as medicating with drugs or even attempting suicide. Anger, many times, is at the bottom of that. Well, unfortunately, when you take the law in your hands and you're 15 years old with a bunch of you might find yourself in jail, or you might find yourself committing a murder. Now, society supposedly, or Christianity, wants us to turn the other cheek and not go into anger. But I'm going to have to ask you if you have seen that to be true, because all we have seen would be school shootings, violent protests. There's nothing wrong with a protest, but we're talking about that element that wants to go in there that doesn't even know what you're protesting for. They just want to burn something down or steal something. And then, God forbid, we have drive-by shootings of innocent people walking the street. So the anger is not being addressed, and we are not following the Christian principle that says turn the other cheek, which means find out why they're mad before you blow up too. And all the movies and TV shows every night show us about how people take things in their own hands. So wrath is not a good quality to have. And if you have a child at home who is exhibiting anger issues, it's best to nip it in the bud early before it really explodes in junior high or high school.
Can people get so mad or so angry, Pat, that literally they can become possessed? I mean, I've watched some people that I think, man, that's not even like them anymore.
Well, I happen to believe that there's evil in the world, and I happen to believe that some people can be taken over because they're on drugs or because they're on alcohol or something. I happen to believe that something can possess them, either physically because their liver is, being ruined, or their brain is being ruined. I'm agreeing with you that when you see people's faces, when I taught school and kids would get in a fight, the entire face changes. It's like somebody else comes in.
Yeah, and they can't. It's almost like they get possessed where they can't even control it anymore. It's like a car going downhill, and it just gets steeper and steeper, and they get going faster and faster.
And that's why I'm urging any parents that might be listening to this to not deny that, because early childhood, it just gets worse. And I know plenty of parents that I've counseled with, they are afraid of their children, the violence that comes up inside them. And it all comes from this wrath not ever being checked in on an early thing. The next to last one is called envy. And
okay, now I want to wait until after the next break, if you don't mind, Pat, to start with envy. I would like to talk about wrath just a little bit more, because we just have a few minutes before the next break.
Okay.
And that is, what can we do? You've seen so many children through teaching through the years, as I have. What can we do, or parents do, when we start to see somebody start to lose it? I always think that they're losing it and they're mad because something happened that was very important to them and it didn't go the way they wanted it to, and nobody's listening. or nobody cares, or that's the feeling, and then they start to lose it, or they get loud to regain their power.
Yeah. Yes, of course. It's just a matter of power. You know, Sharon, I am a wonderful advocate of school committees. You know, now with bullying being one of the major problems in school, a lot of the parents have gone out of denial, and they've gone to the school and they've said, you are going to do something about this, you know, and we are going to organize a committee to bring counselors in here or whatever these kids need. I think, truthfully, with wrath, like I've said, you know, the earlier the better. And I think parents with kids in schools, especially in this day and time with so much violence everywhere, they need to be proactive, Sharon, and not sit around and expect somebody else to do it. And unfortunately, right, it takes their kid being the victim before some people get up in arms, you know.
Well, I always thought if we really listened to what somebody else had to say, and when they were upset, to be able to say, obviously something didn't end up the way you wanted it to. Mm-hmm. What did you want to have happen, and why did you want a different conclusion, and why is this so important? And just the fact that we're willing to listen and really hear what the other person is saying, I happen to feel that that calms the other person down a lot faster than they would calm down otherwise.
Well, I'm totally agreeing with you, but I have to be a devil's advocate here. How many times did anybody ever do that for you?
Well, I was the mediator in the household I grew up in, but I was also, when I went to central office.
For everybody.
Yeah,
okay.
When I was promoted to central office in the school system, all the complaints came to my desk first. And so I got to listen to all of it. And just really, I would just repeat back and say, this is what I heard you say. Did I hear you correctly? And of course, I don't care how perfect it was. Everybody said I didn't get it right the first time. And it might take 3, 4, 5 times before they go, yes, you heard me. And then I'd say, okay, I want time to think about this. And this is when I'm going to get back to you. You know, and just because I wanted them to be calmer so that they could hear you know, whatever was coming next. But I just felt like the minute they actually know that you heard them, there was this calmness that would come over people. And that brings us to our next break. Stay tuned, and we will talk about pride and envy when we return.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Mark Twain said the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. The why is hidden in your name. Sharon Lynn Wyeth has created a scientific way of deciphering your name to reveal your contract for this lifetime, and your name even specifies the 7 areas that are subsets of your soul's overall goal. Your name identifies who you are to both yourself and others. What does your name say about you? Contact Sharon Lynn Wyeth at info@knowthename.com for your stunning name review.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Welcome back to Luminescence. You're with Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and our special guest today is Pat Robertson Rice. Now, Pat's website is spiritualbeginnings101.com, or look at it as spiritualbeginnings101.com. And remember, beginnings has two ends in the middle. You can just tell us, we're school teachers, what we're used to doing, right, Pat?
Yep.
Okay, we've got two left, envy and pride.
Okay. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on envy except to just say three things that people may not recognize that might help them see if they are jealous. A synonym for envy is the concept of jealousy. And, you know, jealousy is called the green-eyed monster. So if you exhibit these characteristics, you may want to take a look at yourself and see if you are a jealous person, if nobody's already informed you of that. And so the first thing jealous people do is that they, or envious people, they resent what another person has that you feel like you don't, whether that's a car, whether that's a sparkling personality, whether that's beauty, or whether that's intelligence. If you resent them for it, and if you're willing, when you resent them, to say things, take jabs at them in public, and say things behind their back that aren't true. Like if somebody was bragging on, this kid did a bang-up job in the school play, and you'd say very quietly, well, did you know he'd been arrested last year? That's not even true, but you take jabs to take their glory away. Then the second thing you do is to wish that person, I've even heard some of my people I've worked with say, well, I prayed that he would lose that car, or he'd be in a wreck, or he'd be, have a bad game and break his knee and not able to play basketball. I've had people confess that they actually prayed that that person would get deprived of what they had. And then the third kicker is that when somebody that you've been, envious of them, when they stumble, that you absolutely find joy in that. So if they were in a wreck, you were joyous about it. If they fell down and hurt themselves and broke the arm, you were joyous about it. So if you are the kind of person listening today who has ever felt that, then I think you would have to think about, well, are those characteristics I have done? Now, I say pride for the last, Sharon, because it is called the father of all sins and the worst sin and the unforgivable sin as far as God is concerned. Well, I had a hard time with this because as school teachers, both of us know it is very important to teach pride to children. Let's take pride in our school. I want you to show up for extracurricular activities, be on the teams to represent our school. I want you to take pride in how you appear when you go out in public for a job interview. I want you to take pride in your work so that you have something nice to go into the science fair. So in the beginning, I did not understand the difference in the pride that I couldn't understand why God would be mad about that. Well, the more I read about it, the more I realized that they were talking about two kinds of pride. So there's a pride in yourself, but then the second kind of pride that they do not like is when they, meaning the prideful people, put themselves up on a throne and try to become the god. So the characteristics of these people, these very prideful people, is usually they are braggarts. They never stop talking about themselves. They're usually some part of a narcissistic personality where they're all out for themselves and don't really care about anybody else as long as their needs get met. And as far as a personality is concerned, they're usually very arrogant. Now, don't ever expect them to praise you. Oh, no. Don't ever expect them to give credit to anybody for anything that they do well because they're too busy telling you you know, of course, how wonderful they are. So they brag on their business success. They tell you about all their expensive vacations they've been on. And some of the things they might say is, no one could have solved that problem in the lab but me. And if you're looking for a winner, coach, don't look any further. I can deliver the goods. But the Bible says, you might want to remember that pride goeth before a fall. So you can go on and on in that manner, but pretty soon you're going to turn enough people off that you're going to kind of be left holding the bag. But don't ever expect an apology, and don't ever expect them to be concerned about anybody's welfare but their own. And just remember, this is the worst one.
You know, this one, as I'm thinking about with pride, we do want people to be pleased with their own accomplishments because that builds up their self-confidence.
Yes. Yes. And that's why it was hard for me the first class I took on this. And I thought, y'all, come on. How can that be? Sharon, we don't have much time, so you asked me, what can we do about it?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to go to an old quote, all right? 90% of solving a problem, 90%, is to recognize that you have a problem. Because as long as you're in denial, you're just going to say, oh, well, that was nice, and go on and keep doing what you were doing anyway. So 90% cure is to recognize you have a problem and get out of denial and then do something about it. Okay, so one thing that everybody knows is that we have a lot of self-help programs. We have Alcoholics Anonymous, we have Narcotics Anonymous, we have Take Off Pound Simply, we have anger management seminars. So the solution would be to go to a higher source who can help you. So either go to see a counselor, go to see a therapist, or start attending meetings that talk about whatever your problem is. Second thing you can do is, to me, the smartest thing is you could actively try to develop integrity if you haven't had it. Now, integrity means always doing the right thing at the right time and in the right place. And if you always try to do right, if you always try whatever place you're in, whatever's going around you, to stick to your guns, try to do the right thing, and in the right timing, you know, if you get caught in the middle of the riot, then you try to do the right thing to help other people get to safety or whatever you're doing. If you do that, then all the psychology books say you'll never have any of these. You will never have any of these seven deadly sins. Then the next thing you can do, which will not ever be said unless you go to church, and that is that you need to call on a higher power, and you need to ask God, if you're sincere about this, to help you with the strength and to send you some angels to help you. And then the fourth thing you need to do, which is not going to be talked about unless you're in church, is that you need to trust that God has a plan for your life, and if you stop screwing it up, you are going to have a life of joy and happiness and usefulness.
Yeah, that's the problem, though. We get in there and we screw it up.
I know.
I just think that's human nature. So
it is human nature. It is human nature.
Can people go to spiritualbeginnings101.com and schedule with you, or how do they go about doing that, Pat?
Just go right on that website, and I'll be so happy to talk to them. But I want to get something in real quick, Sharon, before we have to stop. That was two years ago, CBS was doing a special on issues of the world, you know, that kind of stuff. So they took a poll on what people thought were the seven deadly sins of 2020 or 2019 or whatever it was. And I happened to catch the magazine article that was written about it, and I saved it so I could teach it to my classes when I'm talking about this topic. And What do you think would have been the seven deadly sins that are going on in our country that we need to put a stop to right away? Tell me two things you bet are on the list.
Okay. One would be the sloth or the laziness.
And no, not our seven deadly. What's in the world today? What do you think are the biggest sins that we're allowing to happen in the world today that are harming people?
I think greed and drugs.
Okay, you got one of them. All right, the top of the list was racism. The second one was terrorism. The third place. Well, I don't think I did a good question for you. The third one that people saw, and these were rated in prior, you know, who got the most votes, drug trafficking. Under that, sex trafficking. Number five was domestic violence. Number six was bullying in schools. And number seven was tax evasion. So they explained them, and that was only after that that I saw what they meant. And they were talking about that the middle class was sick and tired of bearing the brunt of paying for everything, and that the rich kept getting richer and getting all the breaks, and they didn't have to pay any money when they made $3 million a year, and the poor kept getting poor, which, you know, they were referring to was the middle class. And then I understood, you know, what they were talking about.
And this is a great topic for a future show down the road, because unfortunately we are out of time again. I want to remind everybody that Pat can be reached through her website, spiritualbeginnings101.com, and that next week our guest is J.J. Dewey, or Joseph John Dewey. He has written The Initiate.
Him.
Yeah, we all do. And he's written The Initiate and The Keys, the 12 keys that are so important. And we're going to be talking about some of those 12 keys to having a spiritually successful life next week with J.J. Dewey. And Pat, I want to thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Always love it
when you're on the show. Oh, my
thank
pleasure.
You very much.
We always end our show with the song Shine by Dee Lamour. And again, it's DeeLamour.com. Thank you again for joining us. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth signing off.
All that she knew and all sun rays on a shimmer.